Do I need to pray again to make everybody focus? And we can... So, this week we're covering the book of Numbers. If there's time afterwards, I can do some more question and answer from what we've done before, but we'll probably just do Numbers today. So, book of Numbers. Anybody know why it's called the book of Numbers? Those of you that have started reading it. Huh? There are, in fact, numbers. What are they numbering?
The amount of people in the nation of Israel, all the tribes and stuff?
Yeah, for what reason?
Like army?
Yeah, there you go. Yeah. They're numbering the people for war, right? Kind of like, you know, if you were going to go, like, fight a battle, right? If there was, like, 10 buff guys over there, you were like, yeah, we can take them. And then, like, you turn around and there's, like, one guy, right? You got to fight him.
Yeah.
It's like you kind of like war is a common thing to know what numbers. Now, granted, numbers don't really mean much when you're fighting for God, but they number the people. So that's the whole point of numbers, right? It's counting people for war, and it deals with a lot of really interesting stuff, and it's super practical for us, and very fun. But basically, deals with all the battles that Israel. Remember, God promised Israel a chunk of land, right? Are they in that land right now in the Book of Leviticus?
No.
No, right? So this is basically them, more or less, oversimplifying it, right? But this is them fighting their way into the land, right? The end of this book ends with them about ready to cross over Jordan into the land that God's called them into, okay? So that's the gist of this book. Now, there's not a ton of breakdowns. I could give you a more complicated breakdown here, but this is pretty easy, right? 1 through 19, they're traveling from Sinai. Is there an A there? No, it's not. There isn't an A there. Yeah, so Sinai, right? Our fancy thing. Da-da-da. There you go. There's Sinai, right? So remember again the Exodus, right? They came out of Egypt. And they bebop down here. They go to Mount Sinai. And so this chapter 1 through 19 is them going from Sinai to Kadesh. So they kind of do like a, you know, follow the coast and do one of these numbers. So they end up, chapters 1 through 19 is that little journey right there, okay? So that little journey right there. And then chapters 20 through 36 is Kadesh to Jordan, or the Jordan. Right? Okay, so we've got, you know, the book of Exodus here. Technically, yeah, there's something closer to it. Yeah, like that.
Wow, Jay, ruining it. Come on now. I'm trying to listen to you.
And then this one. Okay, so this is like your River Jordan right here. So then they kind of do one of these puppies, swing back around, and then this is pretty much where we're leaving off. So this will be chapter 20 through 36. Okay? Now, those are not very far. Now, obviously, remember how long they wander around in the wilderness before they get to the Promised Land? 40 years, right? So, like, obviously, the Bible talks about how it's an 11-day journey. Okay? Like, this is not, you know, they're basically... I mean, I don't know. The first one, they're basically walking from, like, Topeka to Sedalia, which seems like a long time, but if, like, that's all you were doing, that wouldn't be that long. And then the other one is basically, like, what? I don't know. Like, Wichita to Kansas City? Not even. Like, I don't know. You guys see. But not very far, right? So this is not very far, but because of them not trusting the Lord and all those things, he makes them wander around the wilderness for those 40 years. When in reality, they could have been in the Promised Land pretty quick, right? It's not that far. I mean, how many miles would that be, right? We got a scale down here. That's like, what, 200 miles-ish, roughly? Yeah, not even. Yeah, 200 miles, so what, that's, you know, what, you could walk 20 miles a day, 10 days, you know? Yeah, not that far. So, just kind of interesting. Now, the Book of Exodus... You guys remember we talked about it, how it kind of pictured you getting saved, right? How there was like the lamb on the blood of the door. I know Drake talked about that some, right? You know, you had the lamb on the blood of the door, and then like it passed over, and then Israel got pulled out, and then we looked at how, right, God sent manna from heaven. It was a type of you getting the word of God. And we looked at, you know, Abraham having to raise his hand in battle. That was a type of prayer. And so Exodus is kind of the story of, you know, pictured you getting saved. Leviticus pictured, right, what was the end goal of the tabernacle for Israel, right? With that Holy of Holies talking to the Lord, right? That was how the nation of Israel kind of built their relationship with God. And so Leviticus is all about how to build your relationship with God, how to, you know, what his rules are, how to build that relationship. So then now Numbers pictures the warfare of the believer, right? So you're a Christian, you get saved, you learn how to start having fellowship with God, and then now all of a sudden, right? I think Bob said it Sunday, right? What is it? What's the phrase? Christian insistence brings satanic resistance, right? Once you start doing something for the Lord, all of a sudden now you're a valuable target for the enemy, and so stuff's going to happen in your life that, you know, you're going to have a spiritual warfare going on. And so that's the cool thing about the book of Numbers, is it tells you a lot about what your life is like literally right now. Guess what? You guys are all saved, right? Guess what? You guys are all saved. You guys are all, you know, you guys are pretty much at this point in time, right? You're kind of in this point where you're starting to do things for the Lord. You're starting to build that relationship. So this book is actually really relevant for you guys as young Christians, especially because you're getting thrown into this battle right now. So what do? Get an AR-15 and go start killing Muslims or something? No. Careful, Jay. This goes on the internet. I mean, careful. Anonymous. Yeah. Careful, Xavier. Yeah. Right. No. Right. For we wrestle not against flesh and blood. Right. Our enemies in life, the spiritual warfare we deal with, isn't with physical things. Right? We worship God in spirit, whereas Israel worshipped him in physical things, right? So they fought physical battles. We worship him spiritually, therefore we will fight spiritual battles. And so that's what we're going to look at today, first and foremost. Now, it's kind of interesting. You know, we're never told to fight when it comes to, you know, look at Ephesians 6, right? We went through that for like 6 months, right? We did the whole armor. Yeah, remember that? And no part of that did it ever tell you to fight. What did it tell you to do? Does anybody remember? Anna's hex, right? It said, you know, what having done all to what? Remember that verse? Stand, right? Having done all to stand. So, there you go. Stand. And so, as Christians, we're not told to go fight, right? We're not going out and, like, picking fights. We're not going out and doing things like that. We're told to stand. So what people a lot of times think when they say spiritual warfare, I've heard a lot of people, have you guys ever like encountered some super spiritual people out in the wild that, you know, they get a flat tire in the morning and it's spiritual warfare, right? The devil wanted to stop me from getting to church, you know, like oh brother, okay, you know, anybody experienced this before? Right. It's a pretty common thing actually, you know, I'm trying to think of other good examples, but it's just like anytime, you know, it starts raining, oh, the devil's trying to ruin my food, you know, it's just like, oh, good grief, you know, like, settle down. But people think that spiritual warfare looks like that. They think it's you losing your job because you stood up for Christ. They think it's you getting canceled. They think it's, you know, the kids at school beat me up because I was a Christian, right? You know, that's not what spiritual warfare is. We're going to look at that more today. What does spiritual warfare actually look like, right? It has to deal with us taking a stand. It has to deal with us taking a stand and then not being affected by the tools of the devil. We talked about that a lot in our Ephesians, how the devil is basically in charge of this earth, right? He's talked about the prince of the power of the air right now. He's in charge down here because God lets him be. And so there's a lot of things out there that he's put in place to mess with us. Your spiritual warfare will be staying clean from those things, staying away from the influence of those tools of the devil. What does it look like? Well, it's perfectly pictured by Israel. So we're going to just basically look at the people of Israel in the book of Numbers. And here's one of the funny things, right? We talk a lot about pictures. We talk a lot about types. But, you know, one of the things that's exactly the same from the book of Numbers to today, 100% the same, people. You realize that? People don't change. People are exactly the same. You know, we talk a lot about how it's different today or whatever, but Bible says there's nothing new under the sun, right? The things people get into, the sins people commit, the tendencies that people have, it's It's all the same as from the book of Numbers. So you can learn a lot by looking at people in the book of Numbers. And I don't know about you, but like I don't know if you've read much of the book of Numbers. It's kind of relatable sometimes, or kind of real. You know, like you're like, I've met that kind of person. I've seen that happen. You know, and so as you're reading the book of Numbers, my hope would be that you're putting yourself in the shoes of these people and kind of seeing what it looks like for them to be going through these battles and seeing how that relates to you spiritually. So, first thing that I noticed about the people of Israel, right? The anybody know what they, what do the just general people do? They get rescued by God. They get brought over out of the Exodus. What's like the first thing they do? You know, God just saved them from a mighty enemy. God just like, you know, delivered them, carried them through, had a great miracle, you know, water on both sides. They do make a statue. Yep, absolutely. We could talk about that a little bit more too. Mm-hmm. Yep. Yep. And that'll tie into another point for sure. Yep. Any other thoughts? Or something they did before that? They started to get a little crabby, right? They started to get a little hangry.
Oh, yeah.
We talk about that, and they start a little bit thirsty. And so, what do? It's like they've been out of Egypt for a whopping like 5 minutes, and one of them's like, "I'm hungry." You know, like your little sibling when they're like you're on a road trip, like you leave the house 20 seconds later, they're like, "I'm in the bathroom. I'm thirsty." Right? You know, that kind of whiny kid mentality. That's what Israel did. So, I mean, put yourself in that shoe, right? You just literally saw God cut a sea in half. You walked through on dry ground, and then the guys that were behind you trying to kill you, like, closed it down on them, and then, like, 5 days later, you're just like, yeah, but I'm hungry. I want a cheeseburger, right? So, first thing that Israel really wasn't, the people fell into, was just a lack of thankfulness. And I think this is super big for us. Super big for us. Because the Bible talks very clearly that thankfulness is more than just a nice thing to do. It is like part of your Christian walk. If you can be thankful and grateful for things in your life, you're going to live a nice, happy life with closer with the Lord. But if you get this bad attitude, you get salty, you get a little whiny, then you're going to have problems. The Bible talks about, right, in 1 Thessalonians, that is, like, be thankful in all things, right? For this is what? A good idea? Anybody know the rest of that verse? No, I need to flip there. 1 Thessalonians 5:8. I don't actually know if I can quote that first section. Now it's in my head. Thought about it too much. Right? 1 Thessalonians 5, verse 8, right? Is it not 5, 8? Is it, what is it? Oh, 18. And everything gives thanks, for this is the will of God in Christ Jesus concerning you. The will of God. This is not, like, thanksgiving is not like a, like, nice thing to throw in at the end of your day. It is literally the will of God for your life. You know, a lot of people talk about, well, what does God want me to do in life? What's God's plan for my life? What does God, you know, you spend a lot of time freaking out about that, especially at your age, right? What schools should I go to? What should I sign up for? What degree? You know, and here's the issue, right? A lot of that is kind of just a distraction, and God says, no, but, you know, and I'll help you with that. He says, my will for you for sure is to be thankful. And I don't know if you guys know anybody like that, but I've got friends that, like, they're literally just live miserable lives. Like, they're just always bummed out. Like, I don't know if you guys know anybody like that, where they're just always sad. They always, like, literally just like, never happy. And I think a large part of it is because they're not very thankful, right? I've got these friends where I love them to death, but, like, you'll take them out to dinner, and every single place we ever eat with them, like, it's always like, it's a little salty. Or, you know, the server looked at me weird. Or, you know, they always have something negative to say. Versus, like, you know, little old me is like, dude, it was like, you know, I'm a loser. I just get excited for food, right? So I'm all thankful for the food, and I'm having a great time. Like, this waiter can be as rude to me as they want to be. As long as I got food at the end of the day, I'm like, my standards are low. That's not to say that I'm great. But there's a lot of times if you're miserable in life, if you're kind of always down, a little pouty, a little bummed out, it's because you're not thankful. You know, I've noticed this will be good advice for you guys someday when you get into marriage or a dating relationship or even just friendships. A lot of times if you're frustrated with someone or you're upset with your significant other or upset with your best friend, a lot of times if you just start thinking about how thankful you are for them, or just how thankful for you are for life, guess what? All of your frustrations kind of go away, right? The opposite of that thankfulness is that selfishness. It's that root of bitterness that comes up into your life. And so it will lead you slowly to turn from God. It brings up a bad attitude. Bible talks about in Romans chapter 1 all the things that are going to happen today, right? We can even flip there, right? But in Romans chapter 1, it tells you what's going to happen, how there's going to be basically, like, at the end times, there's going to be a bunch of gay people, and how there's going to be a bunch of people that hate God and say, you know, they dislike God. It tells you all that stuff. Does anybody know what the first step that it talks about there that started them on that path? Flip back to Romans chapter 1. Yeah, Romans chapter 1, verse 21. We'll get there. Right? It talks about how it basically predicts the future down in verse like 29 and 28. And, verse 26, it's talking about how, you know, people are going to be in the last days, they're going to give up the natural use of the woman. Women are going to lie with women. Men are going to lie with men. You know, basically predicting all of our future now. Talks about how God's going to give them up to uncleanliness. 23, it's going to talk about how they change God unto like man, so they start worshiping man as if he was God. You know, these are all things that you see today, right? Verse 22, professing themselves wise, they became fools. You know, that's, I'm sure you know a lot of people that laugh at Christianity and think they're really smart, but then, right, they're actually really foolish at the end of the day. But look at, back up, right, verse 21. But that, when they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. Right? One of the first steps the devil can easily get you to take to start losing the spiritual battle is start being crabby, right? Do crabby soldiers fight well? Do upset, grumpy soldiers fight well? No, what do? They literally, there was a ship in, like, was it World War II or something, that just had nothing but ice cream on it. And it would just go around and give ice cream to service members. Why? Because morale. If a service member is fed well and feels good and is happy, they're going to go out and fight for their country. But, like, right now, Putin, like, are they having good luck winning this battle against this tiny Ukrainian country? No, they're not, because all the guys are messed up.
Can we add that to the
ice cream?
An ice cream boat?
Ship.
Yeah, deal. Yeah, hey, I like it. So anyway, so that's the first step. The second thing you'll realize with that, with Israel, is that bad attitude, like, spreads like wildfire among the Israelites. It's pretty contagious. So what happens is you kind of end up getting this weird situation. It's kind of cool. Let's pull up my notes from Exodus. So the way that they camp, and these first few chapters in Exodus, you're going to read about these different families. And these different families have different tasks, and they take care of the tabernacle. And they're basically, you know, kind of the people that haul the mail for Israel in the in this time frame. And so you'll see when you camp, you've got the tabernacle in the middle right here. All right, so you got whatever Okay, you've got your tabernacle right there in the middle, and so you see basically there's kind of like a. Basically, these four families would kind of camp around the outside here. I can give you, you've got the priests are over here. You got a family, it's called the Merari. You've also down here, you've got the you'll read about these, and so I don't really, the names don't matter too much. But you basically see these different families in here that are doing the work. And you'll read about those here in the first few chapters of Numbers. And then around outside of that, you have this... you have like another group of people, which is just these... These are just... I think there's 12 of these scattered around. I can't remember how it works. But... Basically, the just the generic people of Israel are scattered around there. So there's like another layer. So there's like three layers. And then all the way outside here, in the very outside edges of the camp. Yeah, Jay knows what's up. The mixed multitude. Tell me about the mixed multitude, Jay.
They weren't very spiritual.
No, they were not. They were not very spiritual. That mixed multitude, that's kind of like those people I was talking about that are really ungrateful, really unthankful, always crabby, always have something negative to say, right? These were those people. And so what would happen is, you know, you've got this inner circle of people. These people are solid, right? They're doing the work. They're actually working on the tabernacle. They are kicking butt, taking names. You know, they don't really fall into a lot of issues. When you're reading down throughout the Bible, these people kind of avoid a lot of the, I mean, I'm not saying they don't fall into some of the pitfalls Israel falls into, but they're kind of almost protected from it all. And I don't know about you guys, but guess what? There's times where, you know, don't you want to kind of be that protected family? The one hauling the mail, that protected person, the one that's doing the work of the Lord at the end of the day, right? Not affected by what these people are saying. Because then there's this issue where there's this middle row, right? There's this middle row of just normal folks. The mixed multitude would get into their heads. Okay, the influence of this mixed multitude would come in, and their bad attitude would seep into the rest of Israel and cause a lot of issues. And so you'd end up with this outer group here of Israelites that would get basically sucked in to bad attitudes. And that caused them lots of problems. You'll read a lot about that. You know, they would complain. They would talk about, you know, like they literally at one point in time, they complained so bad that they literally are like, it would have been better that we died in Egypt than being out here. Like, that's how whiny they are. Like, they're just super whiny. And so, you know, how crazy that is. That's kind of the first thing to think about, you know, is just number one, kind of where's that mixed multitude attitude at in life? Doesn't matter, even in the church, right? There's going to be this mixed multitude attitude, this attitude of negativity, this attitude of whining, this attitude of griping. Someone's always got something negative to say about Bob. You know, stupid Jared's jokes suck so bad. I can't believe he's the youth guy, right? You know, like, you know, or there's the people that, you know, what's one of the things God hates the most in life, right? He that soweth discord among the brethren, right? That's not talking about, like, the app, right? It's he that soweth discord, as in he that, like, you know, talking behind each other's backs, making fun of Jay behind his back or in front of his face, you know, like, this is what it is, right? These bad attitudes, they can seep into the church, and then if they seep into you, if you're not a part of this inner circle that's doing the work and not paying attention, you can get sucked into it then too. And guess what? Now you're hanging out with the mixed multitude, causing problems for other people. And so there's a risk. If you want to, you know, I asked this a long time ago to someone, because, you know, I've seen people leave the church with bad attitudes over the years. You know, there's a right way to do it, there's a wrong way to do it, but I've seen people get really upset, really grumpy, you know, kind of do it all wrong, right? Leave out guns a-blazing, right? I was just like, how do I not be like that, you know? How do I not do that? And basically the answer is, you be this, right? You stay as close to the tabernacle, as close to the work, as close to the Lord as you can get, that mixed multitude doesn't get into you. And so, step one, right, that's just like our life. If you want to avoid the battles, the spiritual warfare, if you want to be unscathed by it, you got to stay close to that inner circle and stay away from that whining, that backbiting, that bad attitude crowd. You know who they are. I don't have to tell you, right? A lot of times my friends were the ones with bad attitudes growing up. You know, and then number two, don't be those people, right? Don't whine. Don't complain. At church, when it comes time to, you know, I can't believe Bob went so long today, man. I'm starving. I hate it when he goes that long, right? You know, like that kind of attitude seems small, but that's the stuff the Lord will take, or not the Lord will take, the devil will take and count that as a win, right? That was a battle you lost when you start griping like that, or when you start complaining about your parents to your siblings, or when you start complaining about your teachers to your other classmates, right? That attitude is, you're officially a tool, a agent of the devil in that situation. So that's kind of the first thing I noticed, is that's kind of interesting, right? That group. The second thing that they did, right, they wanted to go, they sent out spies into the land they were supposed to go into, right? Everybody knows the story of Caleb and Joshua. They send out spies into the land. And what happens? They all come back and they say, looks great, let's go in. What happens? Yeah, they saw giants. They saw scary things. They get freaked out and they come running back and say, no, 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 we can't go in there. They're going to kill us all. Except for two of them, right? Caleb and Joshua. Right? This is where they're saying, it'd be better that we died in Egypt. Caleb and Joshua are like, no, it's fine. We can go in there. We got it. Lord's on our side. And so those other 12 spies and the rest of Israel were literally like, no, we're going to kill you if you keep trying to get us going in there. Right? They really were scared. And so this is another thing that'll seep in. This is another one of those battles with the Lord that you're going to have, is where they didn't trust the Lord. They saw these enemies. They saw these giants. And they said, we can't handle them. So, this is exactly how the devil works in our day and age, right? Where back in the day, he knew where the Lord wanted them to be, so he sent giants ahead of them to scare them out of doing it, right? And that's what I was talking about before. This world is set up with giants in it to scare you and to keep you from doing the things that the Lord wants you to do, all set up by the devil to make you lose this spiritual battle. So, the devil's going to put giants in your life, and he wins the moment you're too scared to fight them. Now, you say, well, I'm not scared to go fight the devil. Well, yeah, but you might be scared to cut off bad influences and bad people in your life. You might be scared to cut off bad friends. You might be scared to cut off bad media, right? We all know there's social media that that does us wrong and leaves us worse every single time we read it than when we found it, right? The doom scrolling. Right? Or even just maybe TV, right? There's some TV shows. Maybe your friend gets away watching them, but maybe it just mucks up your mind, right? Do you have the gonads to win that spiritual battle, or are you too scared that you got the FOMO too much? Are you scared your friends are going to judge you if you don't do that, right? And here's the thing, right? The moment that you give up on something like that because you're too scared, that's literally a win for the devil. That was a little battle, and you just lost, right? And think about how many battles I lose on a daily basis. The last thing I want to kind of look at that was kind of interesting to me is that they prioritized comfort a lot. They get to the Valley of Jordan, right? They get right here at one point, and then basically they go, hey, this looks like a good place to put down cows. Let's just, like, not go over and fight, and let's just chill here with our cows. And Bob talked about it on Sunday, right? More cattle, less battle, right? These guys didn't want to go to fight. They wanted to just hang out with their cows where it was comfy. And so if you can't kill a soldier, the next best thing to do is take away his desire to fight. Like right now in Ukraine, there's like things where we're dropping pamphlets on the soldiers with like phone numbers they can call to like turn sides, right? that's like a real thing. They're going through and doing that and saying, hey, we'll help get you out, we'll help get your family out, call this number, we'll help you, right? Why are they doing that? Why does the Ukraine spend money making little pamphlets, gospel tracts, basically, for that? Because it disrupts those soldiers' will to fight, and that's why this little tiny dinky country on top of the Western support is fighting off big old Russia, right? Because Russia's really got bad morale. And so it's still something that happens today. And so these men didn't want to fight for the Lord. They just wanted to sit in comfort. And so, you know, think about your own life. What are the comforts that we have, right? Maybe it's comfortable to just be friends with that person and not broach the topic of spirituality because we're a little nervous about that giant. And we go, you know, we that might be a fight. We might not win that fight. We're a little scared about it, right? It's just more comfy to sit over here with what we like. You know, the devil wants nothing more than for us to get lazy. Think about, when did David finally fall, right? It says that he stayed in from battle. That's when he finally fell. So that, in the exact same way in our Christian walk, when we decide, nah, I'm comfy where I'm at, I don't want to go fight, that's the day that the devil gets a hold of you and really starts messing you up. And so that's kind of just stuff to look for when you see the nation of Israel. Put yourself in their shoes. Put yourself in their mindset. Realize that they're a lot more relatable than we would like to admit, probably. like a lot of times you want to be like, yeah, dumb Israel, but then you like look at your life and you're like, oh, kind of dumb Jared, you know, a little bit. When you're going through the book of Numbers, look at that stuff. Think about the physical battles they went to. How does that relate to your spiritual battles, right? Am I being affected by bad influences? Is there a mixed multitude in my life that I've got? Or, you know, am I that mixed multitude in some situations? Or am I trying my best to stay in this inner circle to try to avoid it? Or am I trusting the Lord? Or am I prioritizing comfort, right? Where are the battlefronts in my life right now, right? You can always kind of see a battlefront. You always see these, like, little explosions, right? And I think about it in your mind. I think about it in my own life, right? There's these little things where I can tell the Lord's kind of, you know, there's a little tiny firefight going in some places in my life, right? What's going on with those battlefronts? Who's winning in those battlefronts in your own life? That's kind of the, hopefully what you take away from reading the book of Numbers. There are some boring chapters in there too, but for the most part, it's a good time for kind of self-reflection on just how we're doing when it comes to that spiritual warfare that the Bible says we are a part of. If you don't think you're a part of it, it means you're losing. So, you know, that's a thing that I always have to remind myself about. So, anywho, that's about all we got time for today. So, thanks, gentlemen. Thanks, Keaton. Grayson, can you pray us out?